Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Both Israel and Hamas have said they have agreed to a long-awaited ceasefire and hostage deal. It's the first phase of US President Donald Trump's plan to end the war in Gaza that has killed more than 67,000 people and pretty much reshaped the Middle East. The agreement came just a day after the second anniversary of Hamas's militants' cross-border attack that triggered Israel's devastating assault on Gaza. The indirect talks in Egypt yielded an agreement on the initial stage of Trump's 20-point framework to bring peace to Gaza. Now, to talk about this further, I'm joined by Middle East correspondent for The Economist, Greg Carlstrom. Greg, good morning and welcome.
Good morning to you.
Now, can you tell us where we're at? Because Netanyahu is calling Parliament together to discuss the deal and to ratify it. I presume that's a given, or is it?
I think it is. Under Israeli law, because part of this deal includes the release of Palestinian prisoners in exchange for Israeli hostages, that requires a vote in the cabinet. I think there are a couple of ministers that will vote against it, but I think the vast majority of his cabinet is going to vote in favor. It's very difficult for them to vote against a deal that would return all of the Israeli hostages. So I would expect that to go forward. And then when it does, the agreement is meant to be signed in Cairo, in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt. That signing was meant to happen right around now. It hasn't happened yet, obviously, but in the coming hours, it's supposed to.
Can you explain to us what difference anything made? I mean, the presence of the Turkish intelligence chief, the presence of the two key Americans who jetted in for the occasion. I mean, what moved both sides?
I think the presence of those grandees from foreign powers made a great deal of difference. The first 2 days of the talks on Monday and Tuesday, from everything that I was told, were not terribly productive. There was still no agreement on the exact extent of Israel's initial withdrawal from Gaza during this first phase of the ceasefire. There was no agreement on the exact details of the prisoners who would be released from Israeli jails. It was really the arrival of the Americans, the Qataris, the Turks, all of these other officials, who put pressure on both Israel and Hamas and I think pushed them towards an agreement.
Now, the agreement is for an exchange of hostages, and the first tranche will be those who are still living, and then the bodies of the dead will follow in time, coinciding with the release of over 1,000 Palestinian prisoners held by Israel. And have they agreed who those prisoners will be, the Israeli-held prisoners?
I think that list is likely to undergo some revisions up until the last possible minute, up until they're actually on their way out of jail. There are 1,950 prisoners meant to be freed under the agreement. 1,700 of them are people who have been arrested since October 7th, and many of them have been held without charge. They make up the bulk of the detainees, but then 250 of them are people meant to be people who are serving life sentences in Israeli jails because they took part in attacks that killed Israelis. And that's the list that is particularly controversial. There are some names that Hamas has put forth, people it wants to see release, that the Israelis are determined to keep in prison. And again, I think they're likely to keep haggling over that for the next couple of days.
It's expected that the living hostages will make an appearance perhaps Saturday, perhaps Sunday. And that, I suppose, is the first of the only two cards left that Hamas holds. One is the living hostages, the second, the bodies of the dead, and the families obviously anxious to get those returned to them. What is the confidence level, do you know, on the Hamas side that Israel will ultimately keep its end of the bargain?
Not very high. I mean, that has been the sticking point, not only in these negotiations, but in every previous negotiation to end the war. Of course, Hamas remembers the experience of the previous ceasefire, which began in January. The first phase of that was meant to last for 6 weeks. There were meant to be negotiations about how to get to the second phase, but the Israeli government refused to even begin those negotiations and in March decided to resume the war. So Hamas, very fearful that the same thing could happen again. They have settled for assurances from Donald Trump and from the Qatari government that Israel will not do that, that it will not be allowed to renege on the deal. They didn't have much choice but to accept those promises, but I wouldn't say they entirely trust them.
I mean, American assurances are not really not worth anything these days. We saw what happened, you know, the Paris Accords. Out of that, the deal on the nuclear development in Iran, out of that, tariffs on, off, on, off. I mean, you cannot take America seriously these days.
No, and it's not just the question of whether or not the war will resume. Even if Israel abides by the ceasefire and doesn't restart fighting, the initial withdrawal, which is meant to happen in the next few days, would see Israel pull back its troops from the major cities in Gaza. But Israel would continue to occupy about half of the territory. And that, according to the Trump agreement, might be the case for the foreseeable future, because it won't have to conduct a second gradual withdrawal until such time as there is an international peacekeeping force that is ready to come into Gaza, provide security, work on disarming Hamas. The Trump administration has assured everyone that it will negotiate in phase two about exactly how to stand up that peacekeeping force. But so far, no one has committed troops to it. No one in the Arab world seems particularly interested in signing up. So it's an open question whether that force will even materialize. And then if it does, whether Trump will hold Israel to its subsequent promised withdrawals.
And the future governance of the Strip is the huge question that hangs over all of this. But if the Israelis continue to occupy half of it, I mean, does it mean that will be unlivable by Palestinians, or are they going to have to live literally side by side with the IDF?
For now, I mean, most of Gaza, sadly, is unlivable anyway after 2 years of war. And obviously, once the fighting stops, people in Gaza will expect that there will be some kind of swift process of reconstruction. But I think that is unlikely to happen in the near future, in part because, as you say, you're still going to have Israeli troops on a good chunk of Gazan territory, not necessarily territory where many people live. It's not the most densely populated parts of the Strip, but it includes, for example, much of the farmland in Gaza that is going to be inaccessible to Palestinian farmers. So that's one obstacle to reconstruction. Another issue is, I think until such time as you have a further withdrawal and some outside force to provide security in Gaza, made up of Arabs, made up of Palestinians, no one is going to trust that the war is really over for good. And no one is going to, I think, want to commit billions of dollars in aid to rebuild Gaza if there's a risk that in a few years' time, there might be another conflict and that investment might be blown up again.
We've seen pictures from Khan Yunis of people celebrating the end of the war. I suppose it's more in hope than in true expectation. But we saw exactly the same kind of pictures for perhaps a healthier population back in January. And of course, we know how short-lived the whole thing was. Just one of the texts from my listeners. If this deal holds, if it goes beyond the first phase, if all the hostages on both sides are released, if Israel withdraws its troops and does not resume its bombing, if aid gets in, then I'll start to believe in this agreement. I count five ifs above. Let's see. Trump and Netanyahu always disappoint. Another one says the security guarantees offered by Qatar and Turkey must be the key to Hamas signing up. Hostages out and Netanyahu has no reason to hold back. The whole thing is very strange. And Greg, finally, I mean, this is all about Trump and the Peace Prize, isn't it?
It is. I think the timing of it even is no coincidence, given that the Nobel Committee is meant to award the prize on Friday. But I think if there's a way for them to do it on a provisional basis, they ought to. I mean, tell Trump, come back in 6 months. And if the ceasefire is still holding, and if there is a process of reconstruction in Gaza and a prospect of something better there, then at that point, you've earned your prize. But I think to give it to him one day after this very fragile deal is announced would be somewhat premature.
Greg, thank you very much for joining us on the line. That's Greg Karlstrom, Middle East correspondent for The Economist. And listening to our conversation, Fawaz Gurgis, Professor of International Relations at the London School of Economics and Political Science. Fawaz, good morning.
Good morning.
For the moment, and it hasn't happened yet, but it will in the coming hours, the bombardment, the killing will stop.
Yes, it's in the short term. I think it's a moment of joy. It's a moment of happiness for the Palestinians. The beginning of the end of their traumas, of starvation, of famine, of death, of massacres. We have heard really hundreds of voices in the past a few hours since the ceasefire, since the deal has been announced. And also the families of the hostages in Israel as well. So in the short term, I think it's a moment of happiness and joy. But I think the deal is littered with minefields. And I doubted very much whether the agony, the tragedy of the people of Gaza will end in the midterm and the long term.
Some of the text coming in, this is not a victory. 67,000 Palestinians and 2,000 Israelis were slaughtered. If they give Trump the peace prize, it will be disgusting. He arms Israel. The prize will mean nothing anymore if he gets it. Greta Thunberg should get it. She is a true champion of peace. Another one, great that there is peace on the horizon. Even better when we see Netanyahu on trial for war crimes. And Blake says, Hamas have not gone away. And that is the issue. So, Fawaz, we'd like to be optimistic as to the prospects for this deal, but history and experience would tell us otherwise.
I mean, I think what we have seen in the past few days is that the Americans do have considerable influence with Israel. Benjamin Netanyahu would not even have agreed to this limited ceasefire deal without pressure from Donald Trump. So the Americans really have basically so much influence with Israel, and they have either failed or they have given Netanyahu the green light in the past 2 years. So this is really, it tells you a great deal about the special relationship between the United States and Israel, as you and I and your other guests have been talking about it for the past 2 years. The Americans fund the war. The American support the war, the American arm Israel, and the Americans, of course, shield Israel in international institutions. And Netanyahu, if the Americans say that's it, and Donald Trump made it very clear, he said to Netanyahu, you have no choice with me. So this is really a major political win for Donald Trump, and he will try to milk it now and in the future. In fact, he says, He might go to Israel on Sunday to celebrate the release of the Israeli hostages and address basically the Knesset in Israel. But the reality is the United States and Israel got what they wanted. They wanted the release of all hostages, dead and alive. And everything else really has been swept under the carpet. Hamas did not have a choice. Obviously, it reached that end, not only because of the Israeli military campaign that has really decimated its ranks, but because of the pressure by Qatar and Turkey and Egypt. It has been cornered with fewer and fewer options. And that's why, depending on guarantees or assurances by the Americans and the Arab and the Islamic State, is really quite very risky option, because we know that Benjamin Netanyahu will not pull out his troops, all his troops from Gaza. In fact, today, just an hour ago, the finance minister, who is really an extremist in Benjamin Netanyahu's coalition, he said, once we'll get the hostages, we should destroy Hamas. And Benjamin Netanyahu has repeatedly said that he will never end his occupation of Gaza. And even Donald Trump's plan, as you know, does not really stipulate that Israel end its occupation in Gaza, but rather establish a buffer zone, as we're going to see in the next few months and next few years.
More comments from our listeners. This new peace deal is a colonial stitch-up. It would make Woodrow Wilson and Winston Churchill blush. Tony Blair and Donald Trump will oversee everything, according to this deal. That's from Phil. Trump will get the Nobel Prize, and himself and Netanyahu will renege on the deal. It'll be like a sprinter getting a gold medal at the Olympics, only to fail a doping test a month later. Another one says, Hamas must disband and lay down their arms. Only then can the Palestinians be sure the war will not resume. The end will happen only when the Palestinians finally accept that Israel is here to stay as a homeland for the Jewish people. It is the refusal to accept this fact that is at the heart of the conflict. That's a view that is coloured by, if you like, an erroneous understanding of history.
Saying that Israel should not have the right to exist. Israel is the most powerful nation in the Middle East. Israel has the largest and most effective armies, the fourth largest army in the world. The Palestinians have already recognized Israel's rights to exist in 1993 during the Oslo peace accord between Israel and the PLO. The Palestinians have said, yes, we are willing to exist, to coexist with an Israeli state. All we want is only 22% of what used to be historical Palestine. The question is not whether the Palestinians should accept or recognize an Israeli state, which they have. The question is, will Israel accept a Palestinian state? Will Israel accept to end its military occupation of the 22% of what used to be historical Palestine? Does Israel accept that the Palestinians have the right to self-determination, a state of their own? 99%, Pat, and I'm sorry to use this ugly number, 99% of Israeli politicians reject the very principle of a two-state solution. A majority of Israelis do not really want a Palestinian state. No basic rights for the Palestinians. So let's really not just, muddy the waters here. The Palestinians and 90% of all Arabs and Muslims have recognized Israel as a state, as a legitimate state. It's Israel and now the Trump administration that do not accept the right of self-determination of the Palestinian people and basically their basic legitimate rights. It's really simple. Just to answer your listener, it's 157 states out of 193 states in the United Nations have recognized the rights of the Palestinians to a state of their own. The question, the challenge facing Israel and the Trump administration, when and how will they accept that the Palestinians have the right to self-determination?
Now, we have to, I suppose, express some tiny amount of optimism that this has some chance of working and an extended ceasefire might unfold. But, what Palestinians can say to themselves today, those in the Gaza Strip, once the thing is ratified and the shooting and bombing stops, what they can say to themselves, well, at least today is not the day I'm going to die.
Well, absolutely. And what we have seen, what we have heard from the Palestinians, and I've been listening to really hundreds of Palestinians' statements by everyday people in Gaza. They want the bloodshed to end. They are starved. They want food and medicine. They want to live. They want to exist. They want to be able to go to bed without being bombed continuously. They want drones to stop really harassing Palestinians. They want to their kids to have a life, to exist. That's what the Palestinians, but let me go beyond that, Pat. Truly, history, when we are not here, when we exit this world, history will remember 2.2 million Palestinians, the bravest, the most courageous people in the universe. They have weathered 2 years of one of the most brutal military machine in history. 200,000 tons of American-made, mainly bombs, have been dropped on Gaza. Israel's strategy all along was really want to basically to ethnic cleanse Gaza. They stayed. They died. They starved. They exist. They have the right to existence. And truly, we have nothing. I have nothing but humility and respect for the people. I'm not talking about Hamas. I'm talking about the Palestinian people who basically made it very clear they want to stay at home. It's their home. It's their nation. It's their community.
Fawaz Gurga is Professor of International Relations at the London School of Economics and Political Science. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.